The aim of this video is to provide an introduction to the conceptual lenses you will utilize in your history project. Let's once more establish what we already know. The first wave of globalization resulted in an unprecedented global integration. The freestanding company was one of its main vehicles. It provided many connections across the globe. It linked British expats abroad with home sources of capital. It gave traders ways of taking advantage of newly identified prospects that they have seen abroad. In sum, it was a great institutional vehicle for available capital to be moved to foreign countries. In this video here, I build on those historical facts and elaborate a bit more on the historical background of the freestanding company. Second, I will introduce a conceptual framework based on Wilkins' work and others that helps us to study freestanding companies. Also, we will look at another conceptual lens relevant for this period of study, namely nationalism. Last but not least, this video also prepares you for your for our first in-class session. So, the historical narrative that I wish to present here considers the historical emergence of the freestanding company as well as its disappearance. Most importantly, one has to interpret its emergence against the backdrop of a strong British capital market. This evolved due to British status as a forerunner in industrialization, which we know is the process of transforming an agrarian society into one based on industrial production. The second factor here then that fed into the strong British capital market has been, of course, the establishment of British imperial powers, today colonialism. And that is something that we tend to view today more critical than only decades ago. Besides the capital market, the emergence of the freestanding company is also related to a legal revolution. So the status of the company changed through various policy changes. For example, the 1844 Joint Stock Companies Registration and Regulation Act allowed for the formation of multiple shareholder businesses with tradable shares. Then the 1855 Limited Liability Act then provided legal protection. So it restricted the possible losses to the capital of the company. Then finally, the 1856 Act extended those rights to Scotland, the context from where the firms that we will study ventured abroad. Last but not least, the freestanding company must also be seen in the context of the emergence of the London Stock Exchange and provincial stock exchanges, where, of course, the shares were traded. So in all, I want to establish here the fact that the freestanding company became a high-risk but potentially high-returns investment that was attractive for many Brits in the 19th century. Then now let's look at the disappearance. So similarly as the second wave of globalization ended in the 1920s, we see a disappearance of the freestanding firm in the early 1920s. Reasons include not only the tragedy of the First World War, but there seems to be also relevant policy changes that influenced the fate of the FSE. One is that the British government started to restrict capital exports. Also, there has been a change in the tax regime. It seems as if the investors with shares in a FSE became taxed more heavily. Then one has also to see that the USA increasingly increasingly became the center of global capital, and that also influenced the fate of the FSC. Last but not least, there is also a historical change in the composition of multinational trade and production. High-tech industry, think of car manufacturer, grew in importance. Wilkins notes that the diffusion of modern industrial processes and products could not be done through freestanding companies. Other corporate structures were better prepared for that. So all in all, scholars have established the fact that alternative corporate forms developed in that time, and those forms serve better as a key vehicle for doing business on international scale, better compared to the organizational form of the freestanding company. Then, having now established the historical context of the FSC, we now briefly touch the key challenge of freestanding company, or we could even say that's a challenge that any other international business company is likely to encounter. It is what Zahir called the liability of foreignness, which arises when foreign firms encounter policies, cultures, languages, and laws that are alien to them. Therefore, it is one of the key presumptions of the international business discipline that a firm that ventures abroad requires an advantage, a competitive advantage over local firms in order to overcome this liability of foreignness. And here it is important to know that there is even a more specific challenge that is only exclusively for the freestanding company. It is, as history has shown, that the freestanding company, by definition, suffered from a lack of previous experience internal to the company on which to draw for doing business abroad. So to repeat in a different way, freestanding companies, as the name indicates, were established with the purpose of doing business abroad without a pre-existing firm in Britain who might have developed the capabilities to do business before. So this now brings me to the first preparatory assignment question that you then find on Moodle. So you will read Wilkins and reflect upon how FSCs could have developed their competitive advantage and why not. And this framework here can help you to think about those questions. In this framework, we mainly differentiate between contextual, organizational, and strategic advantages that may result in organizational capabilities that help overcoming the liability of foreignness. So when you read Wilkins' article, then have those three structural elements in mind: the context, the organization, and the strategy. Now we have discussed the first conceptual lens relevant for this assignment. The second one is provided when we look more closely at the experiences and perspectives of the host country. The important factor here is nationalism. In this regard, think about it. It is really anachronistic at best to talk about international business before the emergence of nation states, right? The concept of nations does have a history too. So it emerged from a political ideology of nationalism. And nationalism does not indicate more than calling for a congruence between people, government, and territory. So empowered by this ideology, we have experienced a wave of nation-building processes in the middle of the 19th century. For example, think of Germany, 1871. Today, however, we often reduce nationalism to the hateful rhetorics of the far right. And we often forget that we take the existence of nations as a taken for granted. So we take it as a taken for granted instead of acknowledging its history. So Jensen Eriksson reminds us, however, that a national perspective survives in a globalized world. And here, again, in preparatory assignment number one, we invite you to reflect on Jensen Eriksson's quote. So how do national identities and borders influence the operation of international business companies? And Jensen Eriksson fleshes out the concept of economic nationalism. Perhaps this is a way to think about it. Then to sum up, the business history project will draw on two potential fruitful conceptual lenses. One is the freestanding company concept as it was developed by Wilkins, and the other one is this economic nationalism perspective that more or less just states that national perspectives will remain important even if we are living right now in a globalized world. So that's it for the moment. I very much look forward to discussing with you those concepts and your ideas on those in the first seminar. See you then.